Welcome to another episode of Reading the Bible Responsibly. We're going to do something a little bit different for these next set of podcasts. We're going to do a mini-series through kind of a difficult book in the Bible. In one sense, it's a pretty obscure book, but in another sense, it's the source of all the Abrahamic faiths, and it is the subject of a lot of disagreement even today. We're going to talk through Genesis, especially the first 11 chapters, but we might go a little bit further. I'll rely on your feedback to tell me how useful this is. So we'll talk about the creation stories and how to read them. That might lead to fewer fights between Christians and scientists. And we'll talk about the fall and the punishments. We'll talk about what to do with the flood story and the strange incident with Noah and his sons afterward. We'll talk about creation moving from vegetarian to carnivore. We'll talk about the Tower of Babel. I think these stories are still really foundational for our culture. So let's see if we can look at them with fresh eyes and read them more responsibly. Let's take a look at the creation story in Genesis 1 today. Now, there is a second creation story in Genesis 2. You may not realize that chapter 2 doesn't just continue the story, but it actually doesn't. It has a different perspective to offer us, and we'll get to that in a future episode. So even if you're just looking at your English Bible, you'll see that the text has line breaks that make it look closer to poetry. Some of that may have to do with how the original Hebrew was written, but some of it is your translators making assumptions. Now, they may be well-founded and informed, but they are assumptions nonetheless. The assumptions are that this isn't your standard narrative, like he did this and then he said that. And you'll notice a repetitive formula among these verses. And it goes something like this. God said X, and X appeared. God saw that X was good, and he called it X. And there was evening and morning the nth day. And we'll talk more about that formula here in just a minute. But there is this poetic formula that's happening in this chapter. Just to point out a few language notes, spirit in the first couple of verses, the spirit of God hovering over the waters, that's capitalized in most English Bibles. But you may remember from one of our first episodes, there aren't capital and lowercase letters in the original Hebrew text, and that word for spirit can also mean breath or wind. So I'm not saying that spirit is a bad translation or that there's no reason to capitalize it. I'm saying, again, your translators are making some assumptions. I think some of them are assuming something like the Holy Spirit, and I think that might just be a little bit of a stretch, kind of back reading this Trinity concept into the very first verse of Genesis, but I know others might feel differently. It's not a big sticky point for me. I just wanted to show you kind of an example of these assumptions that show up. Some other people wonder about the word day here when they talk about the time of creation. And so, yes, the word for day can have some various meanings, but it most often means a 24-hour period. However, that does not automatically mean that this story is actually trying to convey a purely historical account of seven 24-hour periods. This is a poetic retelling, I mentioned, and there's a neat structure to it. So just because the story is talking about days doesn't mean that it's trying to convey a history book sense of what's happened. I want to show you what I think Genesis 1 might be doing that's pretty neat. Now, this comes from Victor Hamilton's book on the Pentateuch. I've learned this from really good teachers of mine. I'm sure others have examined this structure. This is not original to me. In days 1 through 3, God creates the containers or the spaces. So day one is light and dark, or day and night. Day two is sky and water. Day three is land. I want you to imagine those three going down the left column of a table. And now we're going to get to the things to fill those spaces. That would go down the right column of the table. So day four are the lights, the sun, moon, and stars. Day five is birds and sea creatures. And day six is land creatures, including humans. So what that looks like is God creates day and night and then fills them with lights. He creates sky and water and then fills them with birds and fish. He creates land and then fills it with land creatures. I mean, I think that's a really cool way to imagine this. And at the end of it all, God pronounces humans not just good, but very good. So in this story of Genesis 1, we get the image of a God who is well-planned and in charge and creates in an orderly way. He also creates by simply speaking things into existence. I think this inspired image of God in this story can remind us of God's sovereignty, and that can give us comfort. Okay, thanks for sticking around for a very quick tour through Genesis 1. Next time, we'll look at a few specific issues in this text. What's going on with this vault that's mentioned? Also, what does it mean to be in the image of God? I appreciate you listening. Please consider leaving a rating and review. I could sure use a few more people to do that if you wouldn't mind, especially in the Apple Store, leaving some updated ratings and reviews to keep this fresh. That'd be great. And if you would share these out with some friends, I would sure appreciate that too. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.